Welcome to the Insurance Leaders Lab podcast, designed for insurance professionals and leaders seeking inspiration, bold ideas, and actionable strategies. Our guests are remarkable individuals from various insurance industry sectors, and our host, Nina Shepherd, has been an insurance leader for over three decades. Together, we explore what it truly means to be a bold and impactful leader and find personal fulfillment in the ever-evolving insurance world. New episodes are released bi-weekly on Thursdays. Be sure to follow the podcast on your platform of choice to receive alerts when new episodes drop. Bold leaders, frank dialogue, actionable strategies. Welcome to the Insurance Leaders Lab. Good morning, everyone. I'm excited to welcome an amazing Kirkland Smith to the Insurance Leaders Lab podcast. Kirkland is the Director of Operations at EOI Direct, a company formed in 2002 to streamline certificates of insurance processing for condominiums and homeowners associations. Today, EOI Direct provides services to 44,000 associations nationwide. Kirkland also supports another company, EZCOI, that delivers commercial liability certificates for contractors, truckers, and businesses. Kirkland graduated from Utah State University with a bachelor's degree in business administration before being recruited by EchoStar to work in their human resources department. I'm very curious to learn how he got to insurance from there, and we are going to find that out soon. Good morning, Kirkland.
Good morning, Nina. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. Let me start with a word of appreciation. We have been using your services for at least 4 years, and I'm always fascinated by the speed of your replies to our requests. It's literally instant. When I put that in the context of 44,000 associations, even more than that, at least 100 units each, wow. I hope you will share the secret of how you do that. As operations leader to operations leader, I want to know that.
Well, I don't know if there's really a secret to it.
We certainly need to talk about that, but we'll do that later. Let's start from where your insurance journey began. How did you get there?
You know, I fell into it. I actually can't take any credit for the idea with EOI Direct. That's one of our managing partner who saw that opportunity. He was working in Philadelphia at the time for a company that basically monitored loan closings, and his compensation was tied to those loan closings. And so when he's up there in the Northeast, and one of the areas that he was in charge of is Florida, and he would keep seeing these loans that would fall out of the basket and then come back in the next month. And so he asked the question, why is this? And then found out it was certificates of insurance that caused those loans not to close. And then once they had them, they'd come back into the queue. And so he reached out to some friends of his on the West Coast who had started CondoCerts, which at the time was property management solution for documents like CC&Rs, resale disclosure packages, things of that nature, saying, hey, are you seeing this in California like I'm seeing it on the East Coast? And they said, yeah, it's an issue here too. And so that's how the prospect of EOI Direct was created. And then it became something of, well, how are we going to get this off the ground? We need to find somebody that's interested in pursuing this. And so they reached out to me and asked me if this was something that I was interested in doing. I was working at EchoStar at the time, had been there for a little over a year, seen some promotions, but in HR, there's a very clear glass ceiling there, which I knew. And I've always had a little bit of a entrepreneurial streak. So I went out and met with these guys, and they had a chance to meet me, see if I'd be a good fit. And the pitch was basically, we want to get this company off the ground. It's going to be something where you work sun up to sundown and you won't make any money because you're just going to be taking the risk like the rest of us, but you will get a practical MBA out of the experience. That's how I got started with it. And that's what we kind of kept growing with, and it was a lot of struggles. Those guys were very good mentors to me, and I learned an awful lot. Things have finally started getting pretty good as we've gotten bigger, but it hasn't been without its fair share of challenges. But to answer your question briefly, I really just kind of fell into it. And then from there, it was seeing what it became.
I love hearing stories like that. And you know what? That's a very common for insurance industry to hear that I fell into that.
I listened to your podcast with your intro. How did you wind up in insurance? Was this something that you targeted?
It is a similar story. I kind of fell into that. Yeah, I actually was the teacher of language and literature in the school. And one of the things that I knew very well was English language, because, you know, clearly I'm from Latvia, so we spoke Latvian and Russian there. And then English was my third one. And when Soviet Union collapsed, there were only two insurance companies in the Soviet Union, one for the home insurance and another one, any international insurance. And they collapsed pretty much together with the state, with the Soviet Union. So there was an opportunity for private capital to come in and create insurance companies. It happened that my father actually was an aviation economist. So he saw the opportunity to create an aviation insurance company. And
wow.
At some point, yeah, that's an interesting story. At some point, we were the largest aviation insurance company insuring thousands of aircraft flying around in the Soviet Union. Now, we needed reinsurance for that. And the reinsurance for that was in Lloyd's of London. And it had to be reinsured on the London terms. And here is where I come in the play. I was the only person who spoke reasonably good English, who my father could find to do the reinsurance for them. This is how I got into insurance from being a teacher. That was like long, long time ago, like 1991. That's basically when it all started for us. Yeah.
But you stayed with it, went to your MBA and came back into, well, I guess stayed with insurance through that
yeah.
process.
Yes,
okay.
I've been in insurance for, you know, almost 35 years.
What is it that's kept you in insurance for 35 years?
That's a great question. You're catching me here. Variety. I think that's the thing. So I worked as a reinsurance manager. I established my own insurance broking company. We had an underwriting pen for marine risks, so I was running MGA as well. Then I sold to Aon, worked for them as a country manager. Then I moved into mergers and acquisitions role for Aon, working as their integration person for different countries when they were buying brokerages there. So I changed 5 countries, many roles, and it's never boring, in my personal opinion. That's the main story behind that. Yeah.
Well, you had to really be a visionary to see these things and go after. I kind of fell into mine at the where somebody else was the visionary because I wasn't able to see it. But you had to both have the vision and then go through the execution.
Vision is a strong word. And I'm not going to pretend that I had a vision 35 years ago. I didn't know what I'm doing. You know, that's the reality of it. I was translating insurance wordings from English to Russian and Latvian. That's what I was doing at the beginning of my career. Let's be very honest about that. You have to have an idea of where you want to get. It's helpful. And then you move. Step by step, you get into the execution because many people have great ideas, but they are never executing on them. So that's one of those things. But hey, let's get back to you. Am I hearing correctly that you've been with EOI Direct from the very beginning, right?
Yep.
So it's what, 23 years?
Yeah, that's right. It's It's definitely a trying experience sometimes, but it is something that I've probably learned the most from the employees that we have. A lot of people who have been with us for well over 10 years. It's been really neat to see them grow into the ranks as managers and free me up with some things so I can start looking at how do I want to redefine my role a little bit differently now that I'm not having to be chained to my desk to answer phone calls or emails as we broaden our reach and have more backups to operations. So that's been something very rewarding is seeing the growth of those people. And it's been very advantageous for me because it's given me more time away from my desk, which has been nice.
That's great when you're growing the company. How large are you? How many people do you have today?
About 25.
25 employees. Wow. Yeah. And some of them are with you for more than 10 years. Cool.
I would imagine that they would probably say something similar to me where they started this job and we're not really thinking this was a long-term thing, but it worked out that way.
If you can share a few ideas of why do you think it worked out for you and your people? What is that special thing that you're doing in your company?
That's a good question. Kind of getting back to what you mentioned before, ideas are a dime a dozen, but it's got to start there. And it's got to be an idea that actually solves some problems. So in this case, looking for friction areas and how do we add efficiencies to this friction area so the market adopts it. I think beyond that, it's just work. One of my mentors used to say, I don't care if it's an aeronautical engineer. At the end of the day, it's just work and it has to be done. And I think that's what my experience was, especially with EOI, because we're just a one-trick pony. It's not anything like insurance where you have all these different lines of business and a lot of different avenues you can take it in. We're a very simplistic company in that respect. And so it's just about executing on the simple things and doing it consistently. And that's what eventually has started to get more market penetration after years of doing it.
Yeah. I love that you're trying to simplify what you are doing, but I am actually amazed by the quality and efficiency of the service. Do you know how many certificates you issue a day on average?
Around 800 a day, probably.
800 a day. Yeah, I looked up your site and it states that you provide your customers with a powerful US-based delivery solution. And you just mentioned that you have about 25 people in the company. So where is the efficiency secret? And you're the operations person. So I really want to know that. I mean, how do you manage to get it out so fast and efficient?
I think that's really comes down to the people that are in the help desk. We kind of preach a philosophy. You got to be solution oriented. Some of those calls can be really long or people can be a little aggravating to deal with. So it's not about trying to get calls down to a certain amount of time. We don't really measure that. It's about you need to take care of the issue. Don't care if it takes 15 minutes, stay with them until it's done. And I think that it's also a culture of being willing to teach and being patient with people, encouraging with people. You have to have good systems in place so people understand what the expectations are. So I think it's really trying to proceduralize and communicate and educate. And when you have those good systems in place, it makes the execution a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. I hear the operations leader talking, have good systems in place.
And that might just be one part of it because there's a lot of skills that are not necessarily in my wheelhouse. So I guess I probably gravitate more towards operations procedures. We have other partners who are involved in the business who have other skill sets and they have a lane that they're in and we work very well together. So I think that's probably pretty critical as well, where the leadership has to be on the same page with each other. And really, it's investing in people as far as staff is concerned. In fact, Wayne Mittleider is the one who saw this opportunity. And he's had a lot of experience running government agencies, private industries, operating at some pretty high levels. And what was a big motivation for him and turned into mentoring for me is investing in people. Because a lot of the corporate culture doesn't. It's just hard to do that at scale. But we're a small company and we run it that way. There's probably a lot of things that we could do better or grow faster, but we also try to make things comfortable so we can invest in people by way of making sure people have plenty of time off, have flexibility with shifts. Done some things with students like Boise State. We've had several athletes who have worked for EOI Direct in the help desk, but they only had availability one day a week. Well, we could work with that. Cool. So those are the kinds of things I think that really they sound good. Sometimes executing them is a lot harder than it sounds.
Oh yeah.
That's been, I think, the thing that has really helped us. So we have people with good attitudes, and you can do a lot with good attitudes.
Kirkland, I think you nailed it. It's this is the story of success, of how you can build a successful company from scratch. Leadership team looks in one direction and brings different skills and different experiences, and everyone knows what they are doing. And then culture that supports people, their flexibility, their training, all what they have to bring in, and processes from the operation side, like being very clear on how we do things here and what needs to be done. Great. Wonderful.
Well, I would add another one of those. That's something that that I probably struggle with personally. And it's one of those things where as people come up and show their competencies and start taking over some responsibilities or management responsibilities, figuring out how to get out of their way so they can make decisions and come up with different things that might be different than how I would have approached it, but it's a better idea than what I was thinking of. And figuring out how to transition from leader to follower in some respects, which can be challenging if you have some control needs like I do.
Well, you're not the only one in insurance industry. I know many type A people who want to control everything. I'm 100% with you. I am learning that as well, to trust your employees, to trust that they know better than yourself. I have a great story about that. When I came to work to Poland, which was one of my assignments in Aon, I came to as an integration director to put together two largest companies. One of them was just acquired by Aon, and they were the largest in Poland at that time. And I didn't speak Polish. I came with an assumption that they speak English and that they will understand my Russian as well. Just to find out that it's not quite the case. It was a large company, more than 200 people. And I realized I had literally a communication, big communication gap when I came in. So, and I went to study Polish, and I now speak Polish pretty fluently, actually. But for the moment, I realized that I need to change my paradigm from telling people what they are supposed to do to listening and accumulating what they have to say, because I understood them, but they couldn't quite get me when I was talking. That was very helpful to my further development as a leader. I learned how to trust other people's judgments and opinions. And on top of that, of course, it was new country. I didn't know legislation or anything. And that was very useful for me as a learning. Yeah.
That would be because you have the cultural differences too, which, boy, that's hard to learn outside of just experiencing it and making the mistakes.
Yeah,
well, you strike me as a very good listener. That's that is a skill that is also of paramount importance. And it's one that I'm trying to work on myself. But oh, my goodness, it's tough to be a good listener.
Yeah, it's tough, especially for people who are in a leadership position. I am usually saying to my colleagues, okay, you are in the meeting. You are the most senior person there. Your duty is to shut up, not to say anything until everyone else have a chance to say what they think. Because if you speak first, others will just agree with whatever you said. That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you grew from working in HR towards becoming an operations leader of a very efficient company. From a personal perspective, what have you learned on that journey?
That's a good one. And I think succinctly, I'm more capable of plodding through than maybe what I would have originally thought. You know, you know this too from your experiences. It's hard work. It's tough. There's a lot of sacrifices and it's a lot of trade-offs. And it's easy when they're relatively minor trade-offs, but then you get into these spots where you have several things that are competing for your time, your energy, your attention, and those trade-offs get a lot tougher.
Oh, yeah.
And as I look back on my life, I was really young, kind of falling into this, and I didn't have a lot of the things that would be harder trade-off decisions to make. There was no spouse, there were no kids, there's no mortgage. Those are the things that gave me options that were pretty good at the time, like sleeping in my car, crashing on people's couches, sleeping in the office, and doing the 16, 18 hour day type deal. But now it's like, boy, there's a lot of problems that come up with trying to maintain a pace like that. And I'm just glad that I had that opportunity to experience it when you didn't have to sacrifice the big trade-offs. Mm-hmm. Now have a house, a wife, a couple of young kids. I don't have to make those choices, which are a lot less pleasant to make.
Okay. Talking about personal choices, I do have one more acknowledgement for you. I do have a very deep respect for people who are disciplined and dedicated to one thing. When we first met, I think that was 4 or 5 years ago, virtually, of course, you were on a treadmill. And you shared that that's your usual way of working. I think you said that you walk like 50 miles a day then?
Not 50, no.
Is it more?
No. I think my record is 33 miles, but it's usually in the mid-20s. Now that I'm not in front of my desk as often, it's probably more 10 to 15.
Okay.
But the treadmill thing is something that I started back in 2010, and I kind of went whole hog, which isn't the way that you're necessarily supposed to do it, because I just moved my desk out of the office. And so there wasn't like a place to sit. I committed to it right from the get-go and started slow and built up over several years. But it's been a good fit for me. It helps with, you know, I have a lot of anxiety, you get depressed or your perspective gets a little colored. And the movement is something that helps me manage that. I'm a little sharper when I can walk around versus sitting for long periods of time. So it's been a very good fit for me. I'm probably a little bit on the extreme side with it, but it's been a good fit.
Yeah. When I saw you before we started the recording, saw you today and you are on the treadmill. I'm like, yeah, this is my guy.
What are you thinking? Are you thinking about doing a treadmill setup yourself?
No, I do my walking mornings and evenings and I do exercise and all of that. But treadmill, that would be a stretch. You know, I am not sure I can do that. But this is amazing, bringing up the importance of physical exercise for the best performance of our brains and ourselves, right? It sharpens your brains. It helps you to get in the right mood. It gives you the right perspectives. These are all the things that people need in a professional life, and especially in our insurance environment where, you know, there are so many challenging tasks every day.
Yeah. The stress relief that comes from some of those kinds of things, or just a sense of accomplishment. One of my favorite things that happens is that mode that you get into. I think they oftentimes refer to it as that state of flow. That's when you're involved in something and like 3 hours go by and you didn't even realize it. And that is a state that I absolutely love, because that's about 10 miles that's walked during that time. And so there's this sense of accomplishment, and it helps give you a little bit of that boost. And then you can kind of roll that into some momentum once you have that perspective where you're proud of yourself, you feel like you accomplished something, and then you can transfer that into other tasks, especially tasks that you don't really like doing. It helps with that approach.
Yeah, cool. This is your winning formula. Sounds like it, right? And you said you don't have a secret sauce, right? You do. Here is your secret sauce.
It might be. It's certainly one of those things that has a little bit more notoriety, but the people who are closest to me are tired of me talking about it, so I usually don't bring it up very often.
Oh, look, now, this is so cool. So, Kirk, you live in a beautiful Boise, Idaho. I looked at the map yesterday. My God, it's a landscape of stunning beauty. Is it covered by snow now?
No, we've had.
No?
Really? We've only had one snow that's stuck to the ground here, and it only was around for one day. It's been a very atypical winter for us. We're considered more high mountain desert, so we don't get the big snows like the mountain country does.
Okay. Well, still, you're very lucky to live so close to the stunning nature. Do you go outside? Is that something what you do often?
I used to. My wife is from Alaska, and so she's has a love of backpacking, and I grew up that way too, spending time in the wilderness and doing some solo backpacks and with groups and things like that. And since we have kids, it's a kindergartner and second grader, it's just a little bit too much to try to keep pursuing those. So we've gone the route of glamping, where we bought a motorhome about 7 years ago, and that's been kind of our family outings that we've really utilized, and it's been a great fit for us. But where you really get into the wilderness, where you got to put in a lot of effort to get away from people, that's not something that we've done as much of. We're hoping to get back into that, but it's going to take a little time.
Okay. In Brooklyn, we are recording this conversation at the beginning of 2025. How do you feel about this new year? What is emerging for you personally? And how do you see our insurance industry? Where is it going, in your opinion?
Wow. I think from a personal level, I'm in a little bit of a state of transition as we've promoted people into some management ranks who've been with EOI for a long time, and kind of figuring out how I can be supportive of the directions they want to take their responsibilities. And I'm not really sure what that looks like yet. So I'm doing some soul searching around it and some thinking about it to find out how I can contribute in a way that helps them do their best work. So I think 2025, very excited about it, just from the perspective where we have some real momentum. Those things that they talk about with startup companies where it's like a hockey stick approach, where it starts, it's a while before you start seeing that growth, but then that growth tends to build on itself very quickly. And that's where we're starting to find ourselves. The challenge that we have is the interest rate environment, because we're not so much in the insurance industry. We obviously provide a service that adds some efficiencies to the friction points insurance agencies have that deal with certificates of insurance for condos and HOAs. But the real driver in terms of that demand for the certificate is lending rates. And so we've seen those very high, at least by comparison to the last 5 years or so, where they were so low. So one of the things that was kind of interesting for us is in 2023, that was a real challenging year because interest rates rose pretty high and they rose very fast. It was a bit of a sticker shock for a lot of people when you're looking at an 8% interest rate when you're used to seeing sub 3% on a 30-year mortgage. And the orders that we had in 2023 were more on par with where we were in 2013, but we had four times the number of associations in 2023. Wow. So it was a real drop off. It certainly presents some challenges, but we're no strangers to the challenges. 2008, 2009, that financial crisis was another shock to the system. And it's interesting, Nina, you look back on some of these things that you didn't really know what the impact was at the time, but it's amazing at how some of these things shape you when you aren't as confident in whether or not you can make it through. And when you walk through those fires, it really is something that makes you feel like, well, if I can handle that, I can handle a lot more kind of deal. So that's what my experience was.
Absolutely. This is what you learn. And this is, I believe, is a value of entrepreneurial spirit and entrepreneurial experience, because you learn that you are more resilient than you think you are. There are different changes coming like this in front of you, and you're like, yeah, we can do that. I am not sure how exactly, but I know I can go through it and benefit through it and find some positive things in it.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with the word resilience. And unfortunately, there's no cheat codes for that. The only way you get the resilience is to struggle and make it through the other side. So,
yeah, just accept that it's not all roses and you will have to do the work. And sometimes it's harder than you originally estimated, and you plow through it and you kind of get to it, right?
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, tell me what, in terms of your experience, what's, if there was one thing that really came to mind as something that is a hallmark of what executives need to work on, what is that thing that you've seen in your experience?
Well, the one that I think is probably the most relevant for leaders is focus. Ability to figure out what is the most important, one most important priority that you need to tackle at this point and focus on it. And that's one of my usual conversations with leaders, because it's kind of is thought that you have to be a multitasker and it's great to do different things at the same time, like driving the car, talking to your important client, and I don't know, eating your lunch at the same time. And that's not the case. The science supports that you have to be focusing. You mentioned flow a few minutes ago. In order to get into that flow state, you need to focus on one thing. That's where the creativity and the power of your brains are their max. And that's what leaders need to learn and do more of. That's my belief.
I like that. As you were talking about that, I've heard that summarized in a different way, where you need to make the next right decision. And so kind of screening out all the noise so you can take that next step forward. We'll worry about the other steps after that, but you really got to focus on that next right.
Yeah, that's a great summary of it as well. Yeah, I appreciate that. Cool.
Well, you asked a question about where I saw insurance going in 2025. And I think that's a better question that I'd like to ask you. You're in the mix with it so much more. And I have some opinions based on climate change, and insurance is starting to be kind of a sticker shock because they're pricing risk accordingly, which is a surprise to many people with how that's rising. What are you seeing from an insurance perspective in 2025 with the industry?
Wow. You turn it back to me. I love it. The reason why I asked this question is that you are more technology-oriented guy than I am. Although I work a lot with technology in my current role as well. From that perspective, I think it's changing. Of course, AI is that buzzword, and automation. And I still have a big question mark in front of me. Where will it take us? As with any new thing, there are some good things about it, which is like, okay, it could make our lives easier, right? And on the other hand, how do we still keep that personal touch, which I believe is very important from insurance perspective? both if you are an agent or if you are in a service providing industry as you are, for example, right? Your people still need to have that personal touch with your callers and all together, like, how do we handle claims? How do we underwrite? How do we see the risks? There is that edge between how much you want to use technology, AI, and automation for it versus that necessity of still being personal and giving it some sort of subjectivity. That's, in my opinion, is very important.
That sense of connectedness that
we
all are struggling with, at least since COVID, where the mental health crisis that comes from that. You know, I spent, when I was going to school, I was originally planning to go in the assisted living route for studying some gerontology types of things. Really? And I did a couple of internships at assisted living homes. And one of them, they sent me around doing some audits. And so I'd actually stay in the assisted living facility overnight with the residents. And the thing that is interesting about that is how you can see the physical manifestation in terms of the degradation where you're lonely. I mean, it's a chronic killer. So it was kind of interesting. And we see this technology in some ways, it's connected us much more, but there is a question as to how meaningful is the connection to satisfy that feeling that as a human species, we need to have to give us a sense of social network.
Such an important topic, 100%. How do we stay connected beyond just exchange of information, which technology provides us with?
Well, the podcast, where it's more of a long form discussion instead of a soundbite type of thing. So there's some context that comes from it. So that's exactly what you're pursuing with
this
series.
Here you are. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to start this Insurance Leaders Lab podcast, because I do want to create that environment. First of all, we have a great conversation like today, and it's an opportunity for us to share our views and opinions and our experiences. And hopefully for listeners who are insurance professionals, insurance leaders, they will pick something from it and, do things differently. Maybe come up with some new ideas, and that's the gist of it.
Yeah, along those lines, the thing that I really enjoy about listening to media that's more of a podcast kind of thing is, it's that typical thing when you get to a certain age where these things that I thought I was very confident in and that I knew, the more you learned, the more you realize how much you don't know. And then it kind of makes you question a lot of things. And listening to some of these podcasts where maybe it's the same thing that I've already heard, but it catches me where it goes right to the frontal cortex, where it's top of mind. And all of a sudden, you're really willing to put some action behind it.
Yep.
And that's I love it when you have those moments where you say, I never thought about it like that before.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
absolutely.
Or that's a good idea. I thought about that before, but I forgot about it. And now it's on top of brain again. Let's see what we do with it.
Yep. That's it. You nailed it. Kirkland, we are approaching the end of our wonderful conversation. What word of wisdom or guidance do you have for our listeners on their path in the insurance industry?
That's a great question, and one that I struggle with because of my previous comment where I said, these things that I used to be so confident in, now I'm not so sure because I've learned more since then, and now I'm questioning
now
how much I really understand.
You became wiser, right?
I think one of the things that I've thought often about is I'm a believer in the work. I'm a grinder. It's one of those things where I'm not going to be the sharpest person in the room ever, but I'm going to be the person who really values putting one foot in front of the other, because that's where I've seen my success. And the thing that I've had to think about a little bit, regardless of what industry it is or what your job entails, it's figuring out what your why is. For me, it's been the people at EOI Direct. Insurance is one of those things where you probably have had similar experiences. If you go to a cocktail party, insurance is not going to be something that people dwell on very long before try to change it. Who's playing in the Super Bowl or, you know, whatever it is. So it's a little bit of a dry topic, and I struggle with that sometimes as well. But the why, and seeing people develop, seeing people come up with better ideas than what I ever thought about, that's become my why. And I think people figuring out what their own why is one of those guiding things that helps you get through the periods where you feel burned out or disillusioned. The why is what I come back to.
Kirk, this is beautiful. Thank you very much for this fantastic conversation. Now, let me ask you, if people want to learn more about you, where should they go?
Well, we have EOIdirect.com, stands for Evidence of Insurance, then direct, all spelled out, .com. That's the company that handles certificates of insurance for condominium associations and HOAs. And then EZCOI is the other, EZCOI.com is the other company that kind of targeted at smaller agencies with that direct need with insureds like contractors, like truckers who need that commercial liability certificate that helps streamline their process.
Okay, great.
I have to thank you too, Nina. Thank you for thinking to ask me. This has been a fun exercise. I've enjoyed looking through the format that you came up with here. And my question for you is, if someone is interested in listening to podcasts of your other guests, where would they find that?
I do have a website as well, ninashepherd.com, and every single episode of the podcast is there. Or alternatively, if you go to your favorite platform like Spotify, Apple, it's actually there as well. Please share with your people or with anyone who you think that conversation could be inspiring for. I would really appreciate that.
I will do that. And I would imagine there's going to be a lot of interesting wisdom. I'm looking forward to subscribing to that and listening to what some of your guests say.
Wonderful.
It's going to be a great education.
Thank you. Thank you, Kirk.
Thanks for your interest.
The conversation was great talking to you. Thank you.
Likewise, Nina. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Insurance Leaders Lab podcast. If you like what you've heard, please like it and leave a review on your preferred podcast platform. If there is anyone else in your circle who can benefit from listening, please share this link with them. Remember, this is a podcast for you, and your opinion matters to me. So if there is any topic you'd like to bring up, please send me a note to nina@ninashepherd.com. I'll see you back in 2 weeks on Thursday morning. Bye for now.